Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Here for one more time in 2019 in the Rugby Dungeon. I'm Tim, that's JB.
Hello, Tim.
That's Phil.
Hello, Tim.
And we hope you had a lovely Christmas period.
What did everyone have for Christmas dinners?
Turkey.
I wanted to have goose, but I had the in-laws over, and it was
so
insisted
hipster.
Upon. I had to get goose. I had to get turkey. So no, it was all right. But does anyone ever go, "Oh, I'm really looking forward to a bit of turkey"?
I've got to say, yeah, I do enjoy it.
Turkey, no. We had a lot of sausage-related products to accompany the turkey.
Yes, no, that's a good point.
And a beef Wellington.
I knew someone would
well
have beef.
Well played.
Knew
yeah,
it.
Beef Wellington was a good addition, actually.
I wanted enjoyed a rib of beef or a goose, but no, I was overruled. Although, like you say, I got well into the sausage. The sausage meat stuffing
yes.
was the best bit on my plate.
Yeah. Agreed.
I nailed it.
It is amazing how much sausage that we are using in order to excite our turkey.
It's true.
That's the best way to put it.
It's very true.
Yeah.
It's very true. Here's a question for you. What director of rugby in the Gallagher Premiership would you most like to have for Christmas dinner? Who would be the best company for Christmas dinner?
Dimes. Bar none.
You reckon?
No, actually, I think Ackerman is a fascinating guy.
Ackerman would be
You wouldn't be able to skip Grace before eating.
God, no.
No.
Nor would you want to.
And
you need God on your side.
Baxter would be good. Baxter and McCall would be maybe too serious.
They are serious.
But, yeah. But I think they'd be very, very good.
I think Chris Boyd might be a little bit of a dark horse there. I bet you know, a couple of ports with the cheese,
yes.
course, he might start getting
yeah.
some really good stories. He's
Boydie.
Very dry.
Well, I guess all these DORs, even the driest ones to camera, they must have at least a little bit of a sense of humour, because you can't work in that environment without being able to laugh at almost everything.
Yeah, you've got to love the team environment of competitive sports to
yeah.
get into
yeah, you're
this
right.
in the
I mean,
first place.
Who do you actually know who even plays competitive sport who's really like a dullard? No one.
Not many people.
No.
And it's often the big difference you can tell. You can often tell when someone's not played competitive sport in
yes.
their adult life. There's just something about some people.
They're different.
Yes.
They're different, aren't they?
You sometimes think, "Oh, I wonder why that guy is acting like that." Oh, yes, that's why.
Stacks up.
I'd probably go. I think Pat Lamb is a really interesting
Pat Lamb
bloke.
Would be good.
But I think possibly... And Christmas is a day where you want to be positive and grateful and thankful and stuff. And he is the most positive, the most grateful, the most thankful man on earth, probably. But I reckon by the end of Christmas Day, you might be like, yeah, all right. I know it's all amazing.
Well, Pat Lamb would just spend the whole time telling you about how many rubbish players he's picked up and rescued.
Those players are worthless.
Yeah, 23 separate players.
23
all right,
worthless
Pat.
Players.
But that's the biggest criticism I can make of Pat Lamb, and the reason why I wouldn't pick him is that he's too nice.
There's a couple of guys you wouldn't particularly want round at the moment. I mean, Dai Young, after his good win, will be in a better mood.
Yeah.
But Jordan Murphy, you had the pleasure, Tim, of John Murphy and Paul Gustard.
Oh, you did?
They're
Who
not...
did you interview in that situation?
I did both of them.
Because, well, then who goes on to the BT set?
No one.
No one.
Was that going to be the case anyway?
Only winners get to the set.
Possibly. In a draw, you don't pick one over the other. So, yeah, always with a draw, that's what would happen.
Ah. You wouldn't just have them like on either sides of the table?
No. But it was one occasion where the man of the match was picked irrelevant of the result.
Yes,
because
it's true.
Because of
who was one of the match?
Because of Paul Asiki.
Yes.
Because of Joe Launchbury in the 2015 World Cup, holding his man of the match medal after losing to Wales. You tend to pick a man of the match from the winning team.
Yeah, that was awful. That Launchbury picture, the MasterCard, I think it was MasterCard man of the match award.
Yeah,
it caught
everything, can it?
That was repeated by Michael Hooper the following year when Eddie's England went 3-0 in Australia. And Michael Hooper got the fans award for man of the match in the final test.
Cheers, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
The ultimate trolling. I enjoyed Paul Asiki on Saturday.
He's powerful.
Ferocious, so, isn't he?
Yeah, we saw him firsthand in the flesh in Japan watching USA. And he was, him and Taufete, the hooker, were by far the best go forward aspect of the USA team. Mikey Tay was a go sideways aspect.
Yeah, Mikey Tay had
big Mikey T.
Yeah, he had some moments. He had moments. Yeah. Exactly right.
But Lasiki was good.
As we're coming to the end of a decade, throughout this podcast, I'm going to pepper some questions based on the decade we've had. Some rugby questions, like a little bit of a quiz. But rather than do it all in one chunk, I'll break it up. So I've picked Premiership-based ones, international-based ones, World Cups, Six Nations kind of things. So, one question from the international arena. It wasn't even an international at this point, but regardless, anyway, the question is, why did Gavin Henson get fired by Cardiff Blues?
I know. Was pick me, how on.
Beardmore, Colwyn Bay.
He got fired for having a fight or getting drunk on a flybee.
That's two separate things. What are you going for? What's your answer?
I'm going to say he got abusively drunk. No, that's the same thing, abusively drunk. And I think the airline was flybee.
Yeah, I seem to remember being drunk and disorderly on an aircraft. Possibly flying back from Italy.
I've got a feeling it was London. I've got a feeling it was Harlequins.
Would you fly back from London to Cardiff?
No, you wouldn't, would you?
Cardiff.
No, that's ridiculous.
Either way, the answer is correct.
Yeah!
Everyone wins.
Was it a train?
It was on a flybee flight from Glasgow.
Okay.
They had a flight back at 7 a.m. the morning after a match, and he went out drinking in Glasgow after the game, carried on drinking on the flight, and then was banned from Flybe for a period of time.
That'd be a disaster. Because I really enjoyed Flybe.
Because he was very drunk and was throwing ice cubes at other passengers.
And also, imagine how bad that would be. Because, you know, his passing is very precise.
Big Gav.
Another quick question then. Who were the centres when Bod was dropped for the deciding Lions test in 2013?
JD and
I would say Jamie Roberts.
Jamie Roberts, yeah.
Correct, you both got the points there between you.
He was dropped for JD, yeah. Wasn't he?
And the five try scorers for Ireland in their famous win at Soldier Field over New Zealand. You can take it in turns. Have an answer.
Okay, Conor Murray.
Correct.
I was going to go for Conor Murray.
Too late, mate.
I will say Ringrose.
Incorrect.
Simon Zeebo.
Correct.
Henshaw.
Correct.
Ooh.
I'll direct you a little bit. I'll say the other two were both back row players.
Sean O'Brien.
Incorrect.
This was just thinking when he retired and whether he.
Pick me.
Wait.
CJ Stander.
Correct.
Jamie Heaslip.
There's one more. No, not Jamie Heaslip.
So I'm going to go for Josh van der Fleer.
No.
I have no idea.
It's a player that has moved provinces since.
I know. Jordy Murphy.
Correct. I think he got the first try. Yeah, that was one of the moments of the decade, wasn't it, rugby-wise?
Jordy Murphy coming to Ulster.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, obviously. Obviously, Ulster got a good win against Connacht, actually.
Bloody good win. Five-try bonus point win. Yeah. Very important.
Yeah. But come on, let's start with the game we've just watched then. The game we were so excited about. And as a spectacle, it lived up to it in terms of tension. Probably not the amount of rugby we expected to see play, but maybe that was understandable.
I think it was
it was Exeter and Saracens.
Yeah, I think it was an inevitable consequence of the pressure on the situation from both teams. And both teams seemed less willing to concede a try than they were to score a try, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, Exeter's resolute defence for 76 minutes of that game was just sensational.
It was, I mean, you know, it's cliche, but it was a game very, very fine margins.
It was.
I mean, you basically take 0.5% off some of the effort from Exeter and Saracens win that game.
Or a little bit of wind in the opposite direction and two of Farrell's kicks go over so they're in a different position. Or Joe Simmons doesn't hold up George over the try line.
Unbelievable, that.
That was unbelievable.
I mean, I think that's what they'll look at. When they analyse this, Saracens being Saracens, rather than saying, oh, we lost, disaster, they'll look at it and go, look, here are some key moments. You know, Jamie George gets held up. Nick Azikwe knocks on.
Yeah.
What was the other one? Was it just before the end of the half? There was something else?
They were turned over on Exeter's line.
You know, so...
Yeah,
very, very close game. About a battle of equals.
If you watch the game without the score in the corner and you took away the final 5 meters, every time any player got within 5 meters of a try line, you just deleted that bit of tape and watched the rest. I reckon you would have guessed Saracens won 24 points to 7.
Yeah, I would something say like that's that. Probably correct.
Yeah,
I thought Saracens were the better team for large periods of this.
And in the first half, or certainly very shortly into the second half, Saracens had 6 visits into Exeter's 22 and got 0 points from them.
Yeah, which is Nick Mullins on comms was saying that first time in God knows how long they went in with 0 points.
Yeah, yeah.
And how often do you see at Sandy Park Exeter being dominated in possession?
Yeah.
In the first half, Exeter went in 7-0 up, 60 metres gained to Saracens over 200 and... nearly 70% possession.
That didn't really surprise me too much, because over the last couple of weeks, particularly that Leicester game, they have been sort of slowish out the blocks, and they came out second half, and their second try, I thought, was very, very Exeter.
It was.
And they just couldn't kind of get on the front foot again.
Yeah, the wind did play a part in that, definitely.
So are we saying now, Owen Farrell, England's done? All hail Joe Simmons.
Might be a bit soon to call that.
On a serious note, though, do you think he's far away from an England call?
I wouldn't say so. He can't be far away. Where would you rank him? If you're ranking fly halves at the moment...
I don't know is the answer.
So
I mean,
top two are definitely in there. Marcus Smith is not playing particularly well at the moment. He shows some brilliant moments, but also some missing touch, some basics.
Yeah, insane.
If you were to say... Yeah, rank him is a good way... put it, or if you're going to say, hey, who do you want to sign for your club tomorrow? I don't think people would even talk about Joe Simmons. But actually, at some point, we're going to have to say, you know, not only is he a good Premiership fly half, maybe he deserves a jump to international.
I look at it and I think it's hard to judge because he sat behind that Exeter pack.
Yeah.
What's his name? Jacob Umanga for Wasps is a young guy that's actually done quite well. But he's had to really fight for that. Whereas when Manu Vunipola's stepped in at Saracens, he's behind Saracens' pack, and he's look how comfortable he's finding it. I reckon any fly half, you'd see the best of them if they were behind Exeter or Saracens' pack. So
that's a very good point.
That's not to knock Joe Simmons, but
he's going to have England's pack in front of him.
They're
not bad.
The context
depends if he's playing South Africa or not.
The context is important, and this is why, you know, the people that select international squads. Have far deeper understanding of the game than we have to be able to watch a player, even in a poor team or a better team, and understand how it works in context.
I'd put him top four, probably.
Yeah,
I'd put him ahead of Cipriani at the moment.
Oh yeah, Sippers. No, I wouldn't do that.
But maybe not based on the long term, but certainly the way he's playing this year, I would put him ahead of Cipriani.
Yes, I think. Yeah,
I think I'm probably where Tim is, which is I don't appreciate how good he is. Because I think of him as part of the greater Exeter collective.
He's just a cog in the bigger machine.
Yeah.
It'll be a fascinating experiment to swap Umaga, who had a very important role to play against Bristol, and Simmons for a few weeks and see how they both perform in those new roles.
The thing we are missing is that he hasn't missed a kick all season.
Well, he missed one.
Oh, what, today?
A couple of weeks ago. He missed his first one. He was 37 in a row, and then he missed one.
I mean, that's legit. When Owen
That
Farrell,
might have been against Bristol.
Who is a phenomenal kicker, missed both of his kicks today at Sandy Park because of the wind, and Joe Simmons just slamming him through.
Yeah, and the Farrells were certainly easier than the first Simmons kick, which was
two kicks.
Simmons kick from the touchline, and you see it move, you see it curl around, you see he's hit that too far. No, he's hit it perfectly, and he knows the Exeter wind, the Sandy Park wind.
Yeah. Are there notable performances? Another fly half. It wasn't flying fly half. Max Mullins was good.
Hang on, it was
Max Mullins at fullback, right?
It was.
Good.
He had some good moments. He was man of the match last week. His footwork's great. Him and Owen Farrell between them conspired to give Exeter 7 points.
How do you mean?
Well, Owen Farrell's really poor pass, and then Max Mullins fluffing
it up. Meant
Nick White kicked it through and scored.
Oh, right, sorry, I missed the first 3 or 4 minutes. So I didn't actually see Exeter's first try.
Just one thing, did you... I really liked the Exeter crowd's response to Saracens running out. Not a single person booing.
Yeah.
A few people politely clapping, but most people just dead silent.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. So there was really good.
I can't remember who did it, but there was a poll on Twitter that said, what should they do? Boo, applaud, stay silent. I think generally staying silent is the right approach.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have liked to see the booing.
No.
I
don't really care what they do.
It wouldn't
as
have
long
quite
as they
been
do
right.
It together. That's the thing about responses. Like, it's really cool if everyone just shut up. It'd be really cool if everyone was booing too.
But then, so booing, this is a point you've made in the past. It should be natural to the environment. So
yes.
if you're in Argentina, if Saracens play in Argentina or France,
yeah,
boo all you like.
Yeah,
because that's
like
part of the culture.
Pig heads thrown on the on,
yeah, you know. Exactly. Yeah, bags full of fake blood or real blood, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's fine. In England, it's a bit different, and in Sandy Park especially, because there's such a rivalry, but they're such a good club.
Wow.
So I think the silence and a few applause.
I thought it was great.
Perfect.
Have I got this wrong? Did Chelsea Football Club used to throw celery?
I don't know.
Have I made that up completely?
I don't know.
I'm sure they used to throw celery for some reason. Pull it up, Phil. Yeah, maybe throw scones.
One thing I did watch over Christmas period was Don't F with Cats.
I started watching the first 10
and I'm just going, this is like our Egg Chasers version. We're doing some deep web digging on celery being thrown onto sports fields.
Why is this the headline on this article is, why is Chelsea Football Club fixated on celery? That's right.
2,000 words.
The concept of throwing celery onto the pitch began with the fans of lower league side Gillingham back in the 1980s.
This is what we need to know. This is what the fans are crying out for. Yes.
Before the football season began, celery would grow on their home pitch, according to stories.
Really?
This is on Gillingham, allegedly on Gillingham.
Gillingham was the local club from where I was born. My uncle was a season ticket holder.
Some fans have been known to pelt opposing players with the vegetable when they come into the range of stands.
Yeah, what? I'm sure they were throwing celery, like, maybe 5 years ago.
Well, in 2007, it was banned. Yeah, early in 2007, Chelsea banned celery from Stamford Bridge.
There's a sentence I did not think we would say on this podcast.
A statement on the club's official website reminded fans that the throwing of anything at football matches, including celery, is a criminal offence. I love how it's including celery. Like, these days it's lighters and coins.
Excluding celery.
If anyone is found attempting to bring celery into Stamford Bridge, they could be refused entry, and anyone caught throwing celery will face a ban.
Wow.
I mean, of course,
there you go.
People will inevitably try and get around this. There'll be a guy with a Mac, open up, celery.
Celery. Have you ever read about a Glasgow brick?
That is a newspaper.
A newspaper.
Yeah. Do you know this?
No.
Well, you don't know how to make a weapon out of a newspaper.
So you can't take newspapers into football grounds or some football grounds because a Glasgow brick is a way of folding a newspaper to basically, I think it goes like knuckle dusters, and yeah, it's basically rock
makes
solid.
Like a club, yeah.
Imagine fold it, you know the old thing, you can't fold a piece of paper more than seven times or whatever it is.
Eight
times, there you go. So fold it, and it's rock solid.
Yeah, it is. What's the other one I was thinking of? Not quite as menacing as the Glasgow Brick. There's an ice hockey team that throw octopus onto the ice.
Got very posh.
Yeah, that's one of the Canadian teams. And when they come out, there's just octopus flying everywhere. Actually, is that right? Or is it just one octopus? Have I made that?
There's another one.
And I'm sure they throw soft toys. That's what I'm thinking of. They've got a soft toy one where they come out onto the ice and all these teddy bears get thrown onto the ice. And then
that's less menacing. Yeah, it's like the generation game.
Yeah. But there's also one with an octopus. So maybe we should... I mean, maybe some premiership teams should start throwing something. Yeah. Is that responsible to
what
suggest?
Could be it's Negroni.
Oh, that would be the worst thing. Imagine
getting
imagine
your eyes on your clothes.
You're about to play 80 minutes of rugby and you stink of Negroni.
Yeah, we've all been there.
Did you see the Harry Williams red card?
Yes. I didn't really understand it. Because I wasn't, I saw Harry Williams run on, I was like, I thought he's off. He is off. And then he got a red card retrospectively.
But he'd already got a yellow card, hadn't he?
He'd already got a yellow card, so it wasn't a second yellow. It was a red card for someone on the replacements bench running along and piling in on a bit of, well, it wasn't, you don't get fisticuffs, as we talked about before. You don't get fisticuffs.
A melee. A fracas.
Which we must have seen before, replacements.
But I think, like, if you get anywhere near the opposition bench, it would happen. So how far away were they from the Exeter bench?
He was on that
15 metres.
Touchline, so maybe on the 10.
In my mind, he's in trouble there. You just don't do it.
Yeah.
You don't get off your bench. Interestingly,
he'd been taken off after failing a HIA. So will
that's my defence.
Yeah, will that be part of the defence? If he's too concussed to play rugby, he's too concussed to make a reasonable decision about what he's doing.
Oh, Phil.
He is.
Speculative.
Thank us later, yeah. Exeter.
Harry Williams.
I think he's going to face a Royal Dodge Banthist.
You reckon?
Well, if you think about it, you're playing a game of rugby, you've got a yellow card followed by a red card.
The yellow card's irrelevant to this.
Yeah, it is actually, because it's not foul play, it's just a yellow card.
Yeah.
But I think there's something more serious about coming off your bench than participating. Like the Munster Doctor. You know, he's basically Munster Doctor.
Well, we haven't heard how that's played out, have we?
No. I've not heard anything. Right. Not seen anything. Imagine the disciplinaries have been on hold over Christmas.
But they might wish to make a point with him.
I think they
say this
is... Yeah, which I think would be reasonable, because it should be... No one from the sidelines should get involved at all. No, it doesn't matter if he comes off 2 minutes ago or 62 minutes ago. He shouldn't be getting involved.
You're right.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I thought Wayne Barnes handled it really well.
Oh, he handled talking the whole of which, game. Did you see what Billy Vunipola said? He looked like an absolute idiot, frankly. And that's not something I say lightly, because I'm a big, big fan of Billy. But Wayne Barnes was telling him to get to the halfway line. He said, Billy goes halfway. He must have said it three times and then threatened him with going off. He said, right, do you want to go? And Billy said, I'm a grown-ass man. Or you don't talk to me like that. I'm a grown-ass man.
What?
Which is...
I totally missed that.
Yeah. If you go back... I tweeted about it. Now, I might have got that wrong, but I'm pretty sure I got it right. Which is not particularly grown up to say, ironically.
to the guy that's trying to referee the game.
Yeah. They talk to me like that. I'm a grown-ass man. That's interesting. So I think Billy lost his cool a bit.
There have been some... rugby players doing some... Well, I mean, you might deem it, I'd say, unwise things in various places, both on the pitch and off.
Like, oh.
Joe Marler late last night. Or very early this morning. I mean, I don't know if I want to necessarily be someone that dobs him in, but the tweet...
Snitch!
His tweet is still up there, and I wonder if that were other players... I don't know if because it's Joe Marler, people give him a wider berth than normal. But...
Yeah, I think they do. And I think the reason they do that is because he owns it. You know, you can basically be anything you want as long as you are genuine to that thing. And, you know, they'll go, Joe's Joe, and that's it. Owen Farrell tries to do that, or George Ford tries to tweet that, and it's a very, very different outcome.
If anyone from Saracens had done what Joe Marler's done, it would be blowing up on social media right
100%.
Now.
100%. Yeah. But he owns it, doesn't he? That's the character of the man. Yeah, he doesn't pretend to be anything that he's not, and he'll get away with it, and that's fine.
I hope he does get away with it. I still think it's totally ill-judged.
That's what I mean. I hope he does get away with it. Whether he does get away with it is a rather different question.
Yeah, because it is.
If I was Harlequins, I wouldn't be overly happy.
No.
In fact, if I was Adidas, I wouldn't be overly happy.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got O2, you've got Adidas, you've got, there's lots of stakeholders that whose reputation, who are putting their reputation behind rugby, who wouldn't expect it, that one of the highest profile players who was in a World Cup final to behave like that. And the point being, still leave the tweet there a day later.
I argue this on 2 points, which is, the thing you've just said, all that is absolutely correct. On the other hand, a guy like Joe Marler, you know, you've got to say, you know, the good things you get from him, like the, you know, all the horse speech and going on, you know, various podcasts and doing
going on Jonathan Ross,
spreading the gospel of rugby. You know, that's just the other side of that same coin. You know, you've got to accept he will go a bit too far, but he does spread the game.
And last week, there was some talk about Ellis Genge, who's another strong character who came 100%. Up against Marler this week, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yes, we will.
But the general consensus there was, we do not want to change these characters in rugby.
I agree with that.
And I totally echo that. I just think that this is over a line that shouldn't be crossed.
It's very rude.
If I had Joe Marler's number right now, I'd be texting him to say, do you want to just consider...
I do have Joe Marler's number, actually.
Taking that down?
I agree with Ellis Genge when he said last week, you know, come on, guys, chill out. You don't want sportsmen, rugby players with no personality. We're not robots. And I'm with you, Phil. Completely agree with Ellis Genge on that.
Yeah.
I just think there are lines.
Yes.
And having conversations like that with fans, I'm not sure it's a great move.
Was it funny? Yeah, maybe smile.
If that's the barometer. Anyway, I will say, just not getting into it, but Courtney Laws and Ellis Genge on Twitter, I absolutely love. They're brave. Some would argue stupid. I think I should be brave.
I think they're stunning and brave.
I think
absolutely.
They're stunning.
I love it. I think it's great.
And those two got to battle head against head this week, despite both being loose head props.
Yes,
under normal circumstances.
I thought it was awesome. I thought this was so awesome. One, I love the fact that Marla stepped up to do it, because anyone who knows anything about propping knows they do not like swapping sides.
Certainly these days.
And I suspect he knew exactly what was coming. And he still did it. So, you know, massive, massive respect to Joe Marler for saying, you know, I'm going to go to the other side so we don't lose another player, because they'd be down to 13 then, right?
Yeah.
So, good effort. I also loved it because, for those who don't know about scrimmaging, they can finally see. I mean, Joe Marler is not a bad scrimmager. He's not a weak man. You know, he's not light.
He's big. He's strong. Yeah. He's a very, very good loose head prop scrimmager.
A job which is the most closely related job to the one he's going to attempt to do in tight head prop. And now you can see how hard and technical it is.
Yeah.
Because it's bloody hard.
Yeah.
In fairness
to the lesser pack, they did have the upper hand pretty much all day in the scrummaging.
Would Quins have been better off going to 13 and having uncontested scrums?
Yes.
In hindsight, yes.
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a prop being taken apart that badly.
It reminded me of Tommy Court in about 2013, when for Ireland he moved from loose head to tight head and got totally destroyed by England. Like, totally destroyed.
And you watch Joe Marler, listener
and friend of the pod, Tom Court.
Tom Court.
How are you doing, Courty?
If you watch everything about it, it was so unusual the way that he set up his bind. You can see Ellis Genge talking to him, like, what on earth are you doing? to the point that it looked like, I thought there was a flanker playing there. Like, it just looked like it was unusual and so unorthodox. I just couldn't really work out who it was. I had to watch it two or three times to work out who on earth they put at tight head. And then I realised it was Marler. I thought, bloody hell, there's a lesson there, which is tight head prop is a bloody hard position.
How Harlequins did not win this game.
I know.
They were 14 points up on two different occasions in the match.
And 14 points up with, what, 20 minutes to go?
Yeah.
14 points up at home.
Tale of two bad teams. Marvellous game to watch.
It was an entertaining game to watch as a neutral.
A lot of games are igniting in the second half at the minute, aren't they? Cagey first ball.
Yeah. Everyone's the same. Everyone's looking around at each other. No one's really seeing anyone much stronger or much weaker unless it's Exeter or Saracens. And they're just trying to feel each other out. And then by the time they get to the second half, it's on.
You've got to start scoring points.
Yeah.
Harlequins have got big issues in their centre, though. I do feel for them because they've... I mean, Marchant's unavailable, and when he is getting back very soon, he's going to be off for six months to Auckland.
Which looks like maybe a bad call for this season.
You've got Campagnaro now out long term. He went off in a few minutes. It looked like a knee ACL type injury. Don't know yet, but
yeah, it looked nasty.
He was in tears coming off. He was like, you could tell it, and not just because of the pain. You were like, he knows he's out for
Sioli,
a long
time.
Saili is injured. He's played about nine games in his time since he's been there.
Because he was
injured.
Saili was injured for most of his first season.
Yeah. James Lang injured. That's five centres.
So Caden Murley, who started on the wing, filled in at outside centre. And he can play there, but it just meant from minute, whatever it was, 15 or 20, they were... not their original setup. But with all that said, Lasica, who is, he's direct, but they used him to brilliant effect, and he was against what would be the ideal centre combination for him to, or opposition combination for him to be against, in Eastmond and George Ford.
Yeah.
And he found a lot of traction going through that.
Do you know what? Leicester and Harlequins do very well just to agree a swap right now. Lasica goes one way, Eastman goes the other way. Eastman fits Harlequin so much better than does Leicester. And I think Leicester with Lasica would be exactly what they need.
But then Lasica and Manu Tuilagi?
And Manu.
Because Tautai as well, Jacko Tautai, can do that direct role.
He can.
I think Eastman for Quins would be a good fit. I don't think Lasica is necessarily what Leicester need right now.
Well, Leicester, I thought it was against Exeter. I think they're slowly coming around to some sort of Leicester-y type identity, particularly in the pack. I just don't know if they know what they're going to do with their backs, because I've been on record a lot saying this. I love Kyle Eastman. Kyle Eastman is a phenomenal player, but the more I'm watching him with Joe Ford, I just think George. God, I've seen him with Joe Ford though. Yeah, I was thinking maybe this just isn't the right matchup. He doesn't play enough. When he does play, he's so unique. You've got to change everything you do because he's on the field. So
I think it's more like Tauta was the alternative for Tuilagi, and he's not a replacement for Tuilagi. They don't have a replacement for Tuilagi.
There is no replacement for Tuilagi.
Paul Lasica might be the best, other than Ben Teo, best replacement, or Laumapi if you can get him from the Hurricanes.
Mm. But none of those boys even play 13.
No.
So you've got to find someone who... that's the thing about Manu. Everyone thinks about Big 12s, but actually what you have is a massive 13 who actually can go around the edge of people as well. So I'm sure I could think of someone eventually, but they're not that frequent.
Yeah, Vince Arso, maybe he's not...
Van Rensburg?
Not 13.
Class. Better hands.
But to put it in context, before you sort of beat up on Quins, they've got a team's worth of players out, and had they got the win that they really, really should have got, they would have been finishing 2019 in the top four.
Would they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Tells you a lot about the top four, I guess.
It tells you a lot about the league and how tight it is.
Yeah. They are just a middling team, I think. I think if they get everyone together, they'll be above middling. But then if everyone gets everyone together, everyone's above middling. So, there you go.
I think Quins... I'm more confident that Quins won't get relegated this year.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't think they will.
There were some of their performances earlier in the season, and when you combine their run from March through to pretty much now, they were not playing well at all. I think they'll have enough, but they're still not playing great. But
they edged through against Gloucester, and they edged through from behind against Wasps, which saw a bit of grit coming back to them. And I think with a fair wind and with everybody fit, they'll be They'll be real. They won't be anywhere near the bottom.
I think Toby Booth will. I mean, I'm not a fan of adding coaches mid-season, but I think the addition of Toby Booth is a really good one. Actually, he gives real high quality coaching support to whoever he's with, and that I do think that'll make a substantial difference.
Well, yeah. I mean, Adam Jones is in charge of their scrum. They got absolutely pumped, and not just when Marla went to Tyhead, got pumped the whole
game. They do have an international front row. Well, the two props are
Sinclair and Marla started.
Yeah,
they got pumped,
and Elia is—he's not a small boy. He's a big, strong boy as well. I mean,
who was the best scrum in the Premiership?
It is Wasps.
It is Wasps. Yeah, unbelievably.
Well, the best, as in the least penalties conceded, the most of their own one.
That's quite interesting.
Mm. I'd say Sale are pretty high up there. I think Bath have got a great scrum.
Bath scrum is looking good.
Will Stewart's a very, very good player.
But it's been a theme during and since the World Cup. Is the scrum is still really important because without it, Leicester, they'd go down hard.
They'd go down big. They wouldn't have been in this game
were
it not for the scrum penalties that they won. And they were dominant
now
in the scrum.
Scrums, as we're onto scrums, let's go real scrum heavy. Anyone notice the refereeing by Luke Pearce on Friday night? And in particular, what he did with the scrums?
So I didn't notice it at all until you tweeted about it.
Yeah, so very, very early on, maybe second or third scrum, he just started interrupting everyone. And he's like, come on, speed it up. Got no time for this. Speed it up. Now, this is the least helpful thing I've ever seen. This reminds me, I used to work in a commercial kitchen a long, long time ago. And they'd say, like, you know, you've got to produce two starters and they're not there. And you'd get this other guy in your ear going, come on, where are they? Can I have them now, please? And you can see that you're making them. And this chat is
faster. Yeah, come on.
It's not helping.
Come on, what are you doing?
Stop it. Right, that's what I felt the props wanted to say to Luke Pearce. Just stop it. The scrums take a good long time to develop, and you know, you've got to go through your processes and you can build it from the hook. There's all these different things that they want to be doing. I know some teams are cynical, but they're not cynical on the third scrum. They just want to get their scrummaging going. And I think it sounds good on TV, and I think everyone likes to hear people say, oh, speed up the scrum. But no, they've practiced all week to do this thing, a very important thing. Let them do it. Now, if it's ridiculous, intervene, but don't intervene when they're doing their stuff.
I don't particularly have a problem with it, although the way that you've, because I didn't notice it until after I saw your tweet, so I never was actually conscious during the game, but I don't have a problem with speeding up the scrum just because it does take so long.
If you're, what I'd say is when you're in the scrum and you know, if you watch them train, so I was watching Sale train a couple of months ago. I was watching them scrimmage, and I'll just pick out an example. Rob Webber is constantly talking to everyone, like, yeah, in here, bind here, are you comfortable, are you ready to go? All the noise level is great because, you know, that's one of the things that they do.
Because they're a team.
Yeah, if Luke Pearce is talking at you and you're trying to, like, make sure that your second row is comfortable and, you know, you're going through your processes and you're trying to listen to what he's got to say, I think he should have let them scrummage for a few.
Well, the flip side of that is the reason you do loads of training in the week is so you don't have to check if your second row is comfortable in a match. Just get on with it. I'm with Luke Pearce. Just get on with it.
A 10-second window. Go. What's on?
Well, yeah, it's interesting to see that what has been getting more and more frustrating to watch and more, and we've been talking about it for a long time, it's starting to bubble through. The referees are aware of it and attempting to do something about it. Whether it's the right way to deal with it or not is a different question, but it's interesting that it's becoming a
There is a definitely topic. An element of cynicism, isn't there, with the setup?
Yeah.
But actually, I like watching a good setup. I mean, I think it's really interesting to see how these teams go about their set piece because it's important.
Yeah, there were normally at the Stoop, the capacity is 15,000.
Yeah.
I was at Twickenham on Saturday. There were 75,000 people there. Bit of quick maths. 60,000 people that wouldn't ordinarily go to a Harlequins game went along to watch a club match. Mm-hmm. What do those 60,000 people want to see? It's not, oh, let's have a look at this.
I don't like this.
Let's have a look at this scrum setup. I know you're a purist, JB, but you have to. And I know you love it, and some people do love it. And I'm not wanting to ruin the fun completely for those people. But
what were they
let's
doing?
Be realistic. The vast majority of people are not like you. And I mean, that's a statement that's true of whatever we're talking about. Thanks. But particularly when we're talking about with scrummaging.
Yeah, but what would they be doing else otherwise? Because I don't want to just replicate the thing they would have otherwise been doing in order to attract them next week. Yeah, fair point. I don't like the idea, though, that we have to reinvent the game in order to attract in a load of other fans.
It's not yeah. reinvent, because it used to be not like it is now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you watched the scrummaging from the
slower.
80s and 90s.
It has got slower.
Even from 2 years ago, yeah. It's got slower.
It's got slower through regulation, though, hasn't it?
No, I don't, well, partly, yes.
I mean,
but
they didn't used to have any crouch bind set. They literally used to... Go and look at a scrum from 1990.
Oh, I know, from the 91 World Cup.
I completely agree.
But
they run over and they just bind up and go.
Even from the Premiership a couple of years back, it is noticeably slower.
I'd love to watch a scrum from 1991. Go against, I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Saracens.
Joe Marler at Tighthead could pump a scrum from 91. Yeah.
Come on, boys! Wham!
Leicester, that a couple of points might paper over some cracks, but I think this game against Bristol, the last in this block of Premiership games, I think this is massive.
I think they're going to beat Bristol. I think they're coming. I think they're sort of starting to come around a bit.
Do they play Bristol at home or away?
Home. They play them at Welford Road next on Saturday, I think. And but you've got to remember, they're going to be losing a load of England players. They've got a couple of weeks of Europe, then they're going to be losing a bunch of England players. There's maybe another couple of rounds of Premiership games they've got before they lose their internationals.
Mm. So I think all the way through Six Nations,
partly.
There's a couple of games during Six Nations,
but I think this game against Bristol is more significant than any game they've had so far, because they've got their internationals back and settled. They're at home. If they lose to Bristol at home, I think they're in trouble.
Would Leicester, as it stands right now, would they be your favourites to go down?
No.
Ooh.
Wasps are probably my favourites.
London Irish.
Oh, no, actually, London Irish, yeah, I'll go with that.
They much like they did 2 years ago, started really well, and we were talking about them all. It looks like they're going to be safe, and then...
Incorrect.
They've been going down hard.
A couple of bad losses.
The problem is,
on the bounce,
everyone's pretty good. Like, Leicester are not the worst team ever to be in last place. In fact, they might be one of the best teams to be in last place.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Yeah.
Whoever goes down this year could be the best team to get relegated.
I mean, Newcastle were a bloody good team. I mean, they're a really good team.
And they were fourth the previous season. Yeah.
So that's where the league is now. It's really, really difficult.
But London Irish's issue is, when they have a few injuries, as they have, they do not have the squad.
Yeah, they've
of other teams.
They've top loaded their budget.
Yeah.
So their budget is spread across, I don't know, 8 top class players, and then beneath that, and you've got a guy who's taken up a good chunk of budget who's not played yet, Sean O'Brien, who we said
will never play.
He will
never pull on the London Irish jersey.
We said last year, he would be worth it if you could guarantee 16 games
but
a year.
But what did they expect? I mean, this is the sort of salary spending, which I hate. Yeah. What did they expect?
Yeah.
You know, you're a bunch of professionals. You know the history of the player.
Yeah.
The game tape's available. You know, the injury records are available. What did they think that they were buying?
Optimism bias. Everyone thinks they're going to get lucky. It's almost an example of that.
Yes, I think
you think this is going to be the year. This is going to be the year where he plays 18 out of 22 club games.
They're not helping themselves, because another red card.
Who got red carded this week?
Yeah. For I thought it was handled correctly.
Yeah.
It was slightly late, but he was committed. But it was high. It was head on head, but it was reckless with force to the head of Duncan Weir. Mm. So it was a red card.
Worcester are good. I like Worcester.
I think Worcester in a false. It's a false fourth that they're in. I think they might end up 10th.
Yeah. But I'd also argue that 9th. Not being considered for relegation is a massive step in the right direction.
Yeah.
They've been perennial relegation candidates. They lose players all the time. They struggle to get new guys in.
Mm.
And here they are at fourth.
Yeah.
Now, they're not going to stay there forever, but. You know, they're doing well.
No,
they are.
I quite like Worcester. I think as the season goes on, they will get sucked into the bottom positions, but
they'll be clear.
I think they should be good enough to be clear. But then you just look how tight it is.
Yeah,
the whole league is so tight. Apart from, We can totally ignore Saracens, who are 18, as it stands, 18 points behind Leicester. And Leicester on 6, then Wasps on 11. And then everyone else through to 3rd, where Gloucester are right there, one win apart.
Yeah.
Well, I've got some Premiership-based decade questions for you.
Yes,
so,
please.
So, over the last 10 years, seven players have been Premiership top point scorer. Ooh. Can you name them? There is...
Should we do one then the other?
Yeah, one then the other. There's 10 years, there's seven players, so there are players that have won it more than once.
Yeah.
So...
Do you go first, Jay?
Jay, you go first.
I will go first with the astonishingly good Gareth Steenson.
Got the top point scorer in the 15-16 season.
Only okay. once?
One. He got it in the 15-16 season. Yeah. I won't say the seasons anymore. Yes, okay. He got it once.
Okay.
258 points.
Nailing it.
I'm going to go for... Let's go for George Ford.
Correct.
Hmm.
JB.
Danny Cipriani.
No.
No!
He's not always kicked, has he?
No, he hasn't. He's not always kicked well, is what you mean.
True.
He's also not always kicked.
He's definitely not always kicked.
No, because like, Gopeth would have.
Gopeth kicked
Damn
at
it.
Wasps, and he probably won't
Sale,
get it.
I was thinking.
So you're on one apiece. Phil,
give me Owen Farrell.
Correct.
Never.
Correct.
So I'd assume that England would have messed that up.
But then you would have thought the same of George Ford, but he... As you identified, he got it as well.
This is a outside-the-box one. Maybe I shouldn't do it. But I'm going to. Ryan Lamb.
Incorrect.
That is outside the box.
You are going for some niche ones. So you've got three. There's four other players left. You've got Farrell, Steenson, and Ford.
Ford. Can I please have Stephen Myler?
Steve Miles is good shout.
Incorrect.
Oh.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to get serious now. Toby Flood.
Incorrect.
What?
Oh, that is a good one.
How?
Okay, give me Charlie Hodgson.
Incorrect.
What? AJ McGinty.
Incorrect.
I'm very suspect about this list now.
You've actually mentioned one of the guys, but not given it as an answer.
Ooh.
Phil, your turn.
I can't think who that would be.
My go.
Okay. Can I have Andy Goode?
Correct.
Jimmy Gopeth.
Correct.
Damn it.
Yes. There's two more.
Here we go.
They were in the early years of the decade, the third and fourth seasons in the decade.
Okay.
It's my
go, isn't it?
It's Phil's go.
It is Phil's go.
Shall I tell you the clubs?
No, I've got one.
Okay, go on.
Nick Evans.
Correct.
Oh, well yes.
That's a cracker.
The final one is the hardest one. I don't think
it's 4-3, 4-2 as well.
It's 4-2, so it doesn't really matter. So I can tell you.
Finest one. Tell us the club.
Tell me. Ollie Barkley.
No.
Bram van Straaten.
No, you won't get it. You won't get it. I'll tell you the club. London Irish.
Jamie Staunton.
No.
Who was the 15 that kicked?
Oh, Mapletoft.
Nope.
No. Australian 15. That...
Tom Homer.
Correct.
Yeah.
He's definitely not Australian 15 that kicked.
Tom Homer. I get double points for Tom Homer, surely.
So, Tom Homer got it in the 11-12 season, and he is the highest point scoring player in any given season in the whole decade.
Wow.
Yeah. 200. There was Jimmy Gopeth got the first 2 years, 09-10 and 10-11. Nick Evans, George Ford, Andy Goode for Wasps, Gareth Steenson, Jimmy Gopeth again, he got 3 years out of 10. Andy Farrell and George Ford for a second time.
He's good business, Jimmy Gopeth.
Jimmy Gopeth, yeah. He's still looking good as well. That half break... that set up the final try.
Was that moment of the weekend? Is Amcar's try on Friday night?
Probably to win it.
Yeah, this is a really interesting game.
Yeah.
Really interesting game. So, Well, okay. Where do we start with this?
Well, I mean, if we, when I was thinking about it coming into it, and I was on the train down to Bristol, and by the way, have you noticed train conductors or train managers, whatever they're called, starting to become kind of part-time comedians? Or
I've noticed it on
couple. No, not for trains, but I recognise it in airports all the time. So anyone who's got a public service announcement role, they all want to be a viral sensation on YouTube, like the Southwest...
Airlines guy.
Airlines guy.
The rap.
There was one guy in Manchester Airport... I just think he needs shooting. I think they should just drag him out and shoot him. And he's got this horrible spiel about anything that makes you smell nice, anything that's it just goes on and on and on. And he's just hoping that someone's going to recognise this, you know, his God-given talent. Well, they won't.
When I was going to Bristol on the train, there was it did get a spontaneous round of applause from the entire train.
Oh.
The train manager just started on the tannoy, just said... And now the time has come for you to collect your belongings. And he went on like this in the whole thing. Mind the gap, blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of it, he went, it's Bristol Parkway.
Is it wrong that I want him fired?
I am cringing. Every part of my body is curling up.
I hate it.
It's horrible.
Bristol Parkway is a terrible station too. It was a cross country
train as well. We're going to name and shame.
Yeah, Parkway is a rubbish station. Temple Meads is nice. I don't mind Temple Meads.
Yeah,
but Parkway, no time for that.
Yeah, back to the game.
So yeah, when I was on the train going down there, before I got before I was sick in my mouth, I was thinking the trajectories of the two clubs through this decade. Wasps, you know, we're in the ascendancy, finished top of the league a couple of times, had all these box office names.
Final a few years ago.
You know, they had, you know, Willy LaRue was coming, Curtly Beale, Christian Wade was there, Elliot Daly was there. Pia Tau. They had all these huge names. They were at the top and their trajectory has been downward and Bristol's is the inverse.
Well, even with some of their players. Pia Tau.
Yeah.
Hughes.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
You're not far wrong there. Interesting game, though. Interesting game.
Very interesting game.
Jacob Umunga, I mean, I don't think he's ready for Premiership Rugby yet, but not a bad fist at all. So
when he missed those two early kicks as well,
yeah,
you think, hang on a minute.
But the step to get his try and the lift that little flick pass to Fekitoa to set up the Minozzi try was class.
Yeah. And there's no two ways about it. He's a very, very good player. And do you know what confused me about the whole game? If Jimmy Gopith is fit, why not start him with Jimmy Gopith? Just to give him a little bit of an out. Or maybe that's exactly what you don't do, because you need to give him the responsibility from the off and say, right, it's your show, go run it. Maybe Gopith undermines that
a
little bit. I don't know what the thinking is, but I'd like to know. Massive success for him. I mean, he's just gone out and led Wasps to an away win, which is fantastic.
And that try from Nizam Carr. I mean, a lot of people have said, and rightly so, Piatow, that's not Piatow-esque defence. We saw his Piatow-esque defence at the end of the first half with that amazing flying hit, but he missed the tackle on Carr. But I think that also doesn't give enough credit for Nizam Carr's dummy to do him, because that was awesome.
And his balance as well.
Yeah.
So... I think that try might have papered over the cracks a little bit for Nazim Kaur. I don't know what the stats say. The stats probably all bear out to be completely wrong. I felt he looked like a man running against a brick wall all night long. And he stuck to it. And at the end, you know, he got his just rewards. But I don't think, other than that break, he had a particularly great game.
I thought he was fairly useful.
He's got the endeavour. He's got the work rate. And I guess that's...
He's a great player when you can make it a bit looser. And with him and Thomas Young...
Yeah.
That's the game they want to play.
He's certainly not the biggest number eight that's ever going to play in the Premiership.
No. And then you look across the way, you've got Nathan Hughes there, who he's meant to replace. Well, he's definitely no replacement for Nathan Hughes. But Nathan Hughes
didn't have a good game either. Yeah, Nathan Hughes was kept quiet.
Well, I think Wasps' defence was the biggest change in their team, that it looked really hungry and aggressive. And when you look at Bristol now, that's three games. They got that draw against London Irish... When London Irish had 14 men, they lost last week and they've lost again.
Yeah. Well, we have two complete teams in the league and everyone else is basically the same.
Yeah, anyone else can beat anyone else on a given day.
Because they were the team that beat Exeter. at Sandy Park a few weeks back.
Was it at Sandy Park? Was it
at Sandy Park, wasn't it?
Are you thinking, might be. Was it, or was it, I don't know.
Like, but either Bristol way, got that win at Sandy Park.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
Bristol
it was.
Definitely won, and that's
I might have that wrong.
But you mentioned Wasps' defence that was hungry and aggressive. The Bristol defence, I mean, for those two tries in quick succession, it was non-existent.
Yeah.
It was not at the standard. And they stopped those two tries at quick succession midway through the second half. Bristol win this comfortably.
Mm.
As it turns out, Wasps get a bonus point, a 5-point win, which will be vital. They won't pick many of them up on the road this year.
No. And my problem with this win... Well, okay, so I'm just going to talk broadly about Wasps and I'll get on to the problem with the win. First of all, they do look like a team which are shorn of a lot of talent. We were talking before the podcast. How many players left from last year?
Well, if you think about what's been taken out of their squad, Christian Wade,
yep.
Elliot Daly...
Nathan Hughes,
Vili LaRue, I suppose you could say Jake Cooper-Woolley as well, but really those
Simpson,
although they got Vellacott the other way, yeah. They haven't actually used him. But there's four international, top notch players.
I would guess are well under the cap. That would just be a guess. Now I think they do some smart things. I think the smart thing they seem to very much value pace. It doesn't really matter where in the squad they've got pace everywhere, from Thomas Young to Nizam Carr, all the way through to Paolo Adogwe that signed Kibirigi, turned out to be. So I think that's
good signing. Yeah. Minozzi Robson is pacey for a scrum half.
Exactly. I'd love to know the answer, but I think that is their key thing which are going for here, because if you're going to pick one skill, may as well be fast.
Yeah.
So, they built the team in an interesting way. What I really worry about is, was so much emotional energy invested into winning this game that this is the highlight of their season. Because really, Wasps teams of old would have been saying, well, that's just a win away because we're looking for top four or whatnot. But the fact that they're celebrating this, I put a little tweet out, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, did they win the European Cup? Because the way that they were... I mean, I think Nizam Carr put on his Twitter, it's one of the best wins of his career. I mean, it's a Friday night win against Bristol, really.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's the sort of thing you dream about doing as a kid. Like a last minute scorching try, beating three players, dummying.
Yeah, but in the World Cup final. Not Bristol on, just a Premiership weekend.
Hey, let me tell you, I scored a last-minute try against Liverpool 2s for Lancaster University, aged 18.
Wow.
And that felt pretty good. So I can imagine that even in this game, it feels pretty good.
Pretty good.
But you're right. Actually, more important than the win will be their reaction to it next week.
Yeah.
And if they have focused too much and put too much energy into that win and celebrating that win, and they don't back it up next week with a good performance... it's wasted.
I mean, they're going to have to... In a way, they've had the hand forced, haven't they? So they will have to start Jacob Umhenger again. And I say forced. That is no way a slight on him. I just think young fly halves need time and saying, OK, you've won one game. I don't think that automatically means that they put him in again. But I think that they will do because, they haven't won much.
Yeah, let's not forget. I think it was it seven games, six or seven game defeats in a row in all competitions.
Yeah. What has happened to Sapuanga? Where is he?
I don't know, he
illness?
So on his Instagram, there's a picture of him and his kids on a plane. Now, I don't know, and I'm sure there was a New Zealand flag on the picture. Now, I don't know if he was leaving New Zealand to come back to the UK or leaving the UK to go to New Zealand. I think it was one of his stories. So I'm not sure if that's still there, but it would make sense. Was there any talk of it there on Friday night, Tim?
I don't know if it's illness or injury. I don't know.
Well, he's on Twitter. He's on Twitter and he's saying things like, great win. And I don't know how much he's getting paid, but I reckon it's a substantial amount of their playing budget. And if they've lost all those players, the last thing they can do is lose their best, well, one of their best paid players.
If not their best paid player.
Yeah. So I would quite like to know where he is and why he's not playing. Like, well, even if he's running on... Do something, run on water. You're not allowed weekends off.
Well, at least one of the big names was on the field and did really show up, Malachi Fekitoa. We actually saw what Wasp was signed there because he didn't look good for Toulon last year. And
he did not.
We haven't really seen a lot of him this year, so that was a positive.
Yeah, yeah. There's lots of good things for Wasp to take. I mean, if they can use this and build on it to scratch out some more results, they're not going to have an easy... game next week. I think they're Gloucester, is it, next week?
They don't have a forwards coach at the minute.
Of course they don't. Who's disappeared?
Northampton, they play next week.
Yes.
So is Dai Young doing the DOR and the forwards coach role?
I'm guessing so. Andy Tittrell, actually. Is he a forwards coach? Andy Tittrell. Might be forwards coach.
Andy Tittrell, well, he definitely was there about 7 years ago. I'm not saying he's not there.
Oh, he is there.
Oh, he is, okay.
Yeah.
So,
I wonder if that's, you know, there was rumours about them bringing in Sean Edwards, and that didn't come to fruition.
So Tittrell,
anyway. This
is an interesting little fact for you. Tittrell coaches the line out in the air. Dai Young coaches the line out on the ground. Mm. Work that out.
There you go. Anyway, so some green shoots for Wasp maybe, and Bristol are on a little mini slide.
Yeah, they are. It's not all quite looking as rosy for Bristol.
No, and I think much like London Irish, and a bit like Wasps actually, you take out the frontline players, the squad doesn't look great.
If Peter Tau and Hughes aren't fit and firing, that does look like a bit of a gap.
Well, to be fair, Lamb himself has told us that they're all worthless. What did you expect?
We should have listened to him.
Yeah, listen to the man. He knows his squad.
with Bristol in this game, I think Pat Lam will look back, and JB, in the same way that you described the Saracens looking back at their performance, thinking a little tweak here, a little tweak there, a few little tweaks, and this is a much, much better performance and a fairly comfortable win for Bristol.
Now, talking about fly halves that don't play and are paid a lot of money, will we ever see Ian Madigan again?
In Europe, maybe a bit more.
But no.
We've seen him.
It doesn't seem that way.
No.
He's not injured. He's registered as a player. He's playing in the A-League. So
presumably they're paying him.
They are definitely paying him. I mean, there's no two ways about that. There's definitely money going out the door there. I just wonder what the game plan is. Are they trying to get him out somewhere? Are they trying to engineer him to get to France?
Well, when has he got a contract this year that finishes this year?
I think so.
Because if it does, it's quite an easy fix.
I think they'd like him out the door. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
that's my indication.
The sooner the better.
And then let's go. I mean, I wonder how much that money is actually Rodrada money.
It will be next season.
Yeah, I wonder if that's what they've done. Like, hit him out, Rodrada in.
I know who I'd prefer to have.
Who would you rather? Rodrada.
Let me think.
If I've got Sheedy and Lloyd who are playing, certainly they're playing as well as you could hope for Madigan to play.
Yep.
Then give me Rodrada.
I wonder how little they're paying them compared to Madigan.
Oh.
Madigan 400k, something like that?
It'd be that kind of money.
I'm gonna put it out there and say that I think the position that is being filled least effectively in the Premiership, or the one that seems to be like the biggest amount of gold dust, is 12.
12 is a very smart position to fill, too.
So 12 is an interesting one because 12 has perennially been England's problem position.
Yeah.
They can't solve it. They brought in Teo to try and solve it. They've moved Mano across to try and solve it. They moved Farrell across to try and solve it. None of them have ever really been a perfect solution.
12 has also been, I think, the linchpin of Leicester Tigers' success in the past. No matter which way you look at it, they've always had a really good 12. And that has disappeared.
They're certainly struggling for consistency.
And it seems to be
moment.
A hard position to find good
well,
ones.
Who's the best 12 in the Premiership?
I think Mark Atkinson's up there.
Atkinson is playing well. Brad Barrett for longevity.
Brad Barrett
would probably be.
I would say they're all.
Devoto.
Oh no, Van Rensburg. he's dynamite.
If he is now back to his Lions form,
he's not far off it.
If, then
he's getting there.
The form that saw him play for South Africa, then yes, he could be.
Point is, we could rattle off 10 outside centres like that.
Yeah.
And it's we could rattle off 10 good fly halves. We can't rattle off 10 really top-notch 12s.
Wasps, Gopeth for the last few years has been their best 12.
So, Leicester Tigers, I always thought was smart, because if you look back at it, you had Pat Howard, you had Rod Kafer, you had...
Anthony Allen.
Yep. Should have played for
Dan Hipkiss.
More. Dan Hipkiss. Rinley. who are the other ball players that they brought in? Aaron Major?
Yeah.
I mean, they always had a ball playing 12. I thought that was really, really smart, because you get a second distributor for a fraction of the price of a big name fly half. So that's what I would be looking for. That's why I think Mark Atkinson works so well, because he is a fly half who moved over to centre, and he's really, 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 really effective.
Yeah, he's been playing really, really well. Key to Gloucester.
So if I was looking now for a 12, do you know who I'd be tempted to look at? Someone like Harry Malander.
Malander's an interesting one.
As he's coming back to fitness too.
Yeah, so he played in the A-League a couple of weeks ago.
He did.
Now, Malander is very interesting because, and I've said this before on the pod, Chris Boyd knows his onions about back play. He knows his onions about utilising rangy, highly skilled outside backs.
Speaking of which, just sorry to interrupt you, we've got to talk about Jordy Barrett in a minute.
Yes. Yeah. The perfect example. Jordy Barrett and Harry Malander are like 1A, 1B. Their skill set, their physical attributes and skill set are nearly identical. I'd love to see what Boyd does with Harry Malander, because he's talented, he's tall, he's rapid.
It'll be fullback.
I think he'll be 12 though.
I don't know.
I think he's bloody brilliant.
I don't know. I'm really not sure.
When he plays 12, right? Well, in fact, when he plays full stop, the limited games that we've seen him play, he always looks like he is older than everyone else. He always looks like he's just better than everyone else. Like, he kicks longer. He makes better passes. Somehow, he's ridiculously fast for a big man. I mean, like, he really is pretty pacey. I think I'd have him at 12.
It'll be interesting to see. That's all I say. I would trust Chris Boyd wherever he decides long term to get it right. But yeah, I'm just not quite sure.
But did you see Jordy Barrett got? Did you see what happened to him at the weekend?
He got kicked out of the cricket.
I know. For sculling a beer because the crowd was shouting at him.
So the
down it.
Is that
he drank half a beer and got kicked out.
The way it's being reported. So I've only read it in New Zealand stuff.
It was in Australia.
That's what they're saying.
At Melbourne Cricket Ground.
Yeah, get him out.
The MCG, mate.
Yeah, so the New Zealand press are reporting it like a tragedy against one of their citizens.
He was completely sober
Australia.
And only downed his drink.
Half a beer. He had a couple of slugs of half a beer.
One large sip of beer.
Are they reporting it like when, you know, Iran arrests one of our journalists? That kind of thing.
Absolutely.
He was asked to leave for the day.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and banned for a 24-hour period, something like that. Yeah.
Everyone talks about Australia. Oh, it's a standard living, it's this, that and the other. Really, they're just really into their rules and, you know...
there's nothing wrong with rules, yeah, JB.
It's miserable, anal types of people.
Canada's the worst for that.
Yeah, I bet. So, no, oh well. I hope they're proud
of themselves. Right, here you go. The decade of Premiership top try scorers. Now, because some people tied and some people have won in more than 1 year, there are 10 different players.
Sorry, what's the category then?
Premiership top try scorer in a season.
Easy.
Across the decade.
No problem.
So there's 10 players.
There's 10 players that have won it across the decade. Some tied, some more than once. Phil, you go first.
Christian Wade.
Correct. He has picked up twice.
And I'm guessing...
Three times he's won top try scorer.
I'm guessing most of those tries came against Worcester.
Six in one game.
Yeah, he loves Worcester.
Christy Wade is correct.
Well, I'll go to what I know. Actually, no, I'll go somewhere else first. Tom Vondel.
Correct.
Yes.
He won it in 2014.
Rocco de Guni.
Incorrect.
Oh, shame. What? Shame.
He has not been a top try scorer.
No. That's terrible. I'm thinking Johnny May.
Incorrect as well. Johnny May has not been a top try scorer in the Premiership in this decade. I don't know.
Oh!
It's Phil's turn.
Okay. I'll go for one that I do know. Thomas Waldrum.
Correct.
Great shout.
2 years in a row.
Great shout. 2 years. All right, I'll go for one that I definitely know. Rob Miller.
Rob Miller is correct.
Wow.
There you go.
That was the lowest top try scorer in a season. It was 10, and that was Rob Miller.
By the way, he's got a great highlights video of all of his tries in that year for Sale Sharks.
All 10.
Yep.
Great fullback.
I thought it was 16 tries he got that year.
10. Ten in the league.
Oh, okay. Here's
It's two apiece. It's Phil's turn.
Okay.
Wade, Waldrum, Vondel and Miller.
Come on, Phil. It's like you're setting up a scrum.
Last season, come on.
Shout at me.
Do you not remember last season?
Quicker, think quicker.
Last season's. Who the hell was last season?
I don't know. I have no idea who last season is.
Give me Ollie Woodburn.
Incorrect.
Ah, that's a good guess up. Denny.
Denny Solomona last year was joint with someone else.
Yep.
Denny was joint.
It wasn't Byron, was it?
No.
Can't all be Sale players.
I think there's another.
It's 3-2 to JB at the moment. Phil, it's your guess.
God. Come on, Phil.
There are five names still you haven't named.
Give me Sir Charles.
No.
No, he's not worked on it.
Chris Ashton.
Correct.
Yes, so they're all Sale players. I told you.
So it's 4-2 to JB.
Mark Cueto.
Incorrect.
This is going to be two. Ben Cohen.
Incorrect.
Surely it's too late.
Sale player.
So there is, I'll tell you the clubs with 4-2. There is a player who was at Leicester early in the decade.
Okay.
There is a player who was at Leicester in the middle of the decade.
Okay.
There's a player who was at Worcester. There's a player who was at Newcastle a couple of years ago. There's a player, and there's a player who was at Northampton last year.
Okay.
So, Nairavoro.
Incorrect.
What are you thinking? Are you insane? Have you lost your mind? Okay. Tuolangi, Alassana.
Alassana Tuolangi, correct. 5-2.
It's an absolute beatdown.
So there is Northampton last year, Newcastle and Worcester the year before, and in the middle of the decade, there was a Leicester player.
Tom Collins.
Incorrect.
Cyril Rambini.
Incorrect.
Hutchinson.
Incorrect. One of the players that was Leicester in the middle of the decade was also Newcastle towards the end of the decade.
Nicky Gonover.
Correct.
Damn it. Cobus Reinhardt.
Correct.
Yeah. Well done, Phil.
half a dozen.
Cobus Reinhardt, last year top try scorer with Dennis Solomona. And the other name you haven't got yet, I said Worcester.
Okay.
A couple of years ago.
Hold your horses, Chris Pennell.
Incorrect.
Oh, what?
Bryce Heem.
Incorrect. He was also top try scorer at the World
Josh
Cup.
Josh Adams.
Oh my God.
It's painful.
Call yourself rugby fans.
Goodness
brains.
Me.
We were so good at the top point scorers.
You were terrible. Very good. Terrible at the try scorers. So the top try scorers were Chris Ashton, Alassana Tuolangi, Rob Miller, Tom Vondel and Christian Wade tied, Nicky Gonover, Thomas Waldrum 2 years in a row at Exeter, I assume, Christian Wade, then Wade tied with Gonover and Adams, then Reinach and Solomona last year.
There you go.
Embarrassing.
So right. Three of those Was it four of those? Sell Sharks players. Show's best team in Birmingham.
And another quick question. Do you remember the reason Andy Powell took a golf buggy at the very start of the decade?
I do.
Go on.
Do you want to do it?
Well, I know that he was very, very drunk.
He went to get snacks from a service station.
Yeah.
Snacks and cigarettes, I think.
Cigarettes.
Apparently, so the story goes.
In the middle of the Six Nations, of course.
After a famous victory that we don't talk about.
No. Other games this week?
Well, I mean, it leads on. We've just mentioned Kobus Reinach.
Yeah.
Top try scorer last year. Got him, bagged himself a couple of meat pies in a really entertaining game against Gloucester.
Yeah, God. BT, the four games that they picked this week have been brilliant for a combination of reasons. Some for the spectator and some for the kind of the neutral and some for the whole spectacle. This was another very entertaining game that was... it was closer than Northampton would have liked in the end. But good performance by both teams. Hell of a performance again by the young man.
Louis Rees-Zammit.
Yeah.
I just don't get it.
And
I don't get how anyone can be that good that young.
At 18.
It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think. Was I this impressed by... I was probably this impressed by... What's his name? Marcus Smith. I mean, that's the sort of level of talent. I'm kind of just waiting for him to drop off now. He's going to have to make some mistakes soon. He can't just keep doing this, can he?
No. Well, so how does he compare to... So George North, who was absolutely dynamite as a teenager, on a bigger stage than this.
Yeah, he was.
He was phenomenal. But how does he compare? I mean, I know we've got a lot less game tape of Louis Rees-Zammit at this stage.
I don't know. He looks quicker. I mean, he looks absolute lightning.
He is lightning. Definitely lightning.
I don't think they want to put any more timber on him just yet. I don't think they want to compromise his pace. I don't know is the answer. I don't know. He just seems to be in the right place at the right time, which I guess is his job.
Yeah, and that's a skill in itself, to read the game. And then he's got pace to back him up. So even if he's a yard behind where he needs to be, he can close that gap.
What is he, 6'3 or something?
He's 6'3. He's listed at just shy of 90 kg, which is
small.
Which is light for 6'3. But he's got the frame to quite easily be able to put the muscle on without getting too big, if that makes sense. Yeah. He's got the frame to carry it.
You know, if I was a young Welsh kid now and I had any talent whatsoever, the last place I'd want to be is Wales. I mean, genuinely, the last place I'd want to be is Ospreys or bloody Dragons or somewhere.
Ospreys got beat 44-0 against Scarlets.
Yeah, I mean, maybe be at Scarlets. They obviously have their act together. But like, just go across the bridge and go and play at Bath or go play at Gloucester or somewhere. You know, you get better coaching. If you get the chance to play in the league, there's far more competitive games of a better standard. You know, that's what you should be doing.
I can't disagree with much of that. It'd be interesting to see, do Wales pick him in the Six Nations squad?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Gatland probably would have. I just don't know what the new coach is going to do. Don't know if Pivik is that into him. We'll see about
that. Pivik presumably is into talent. And he did nurture at Scarlets. He nurtured a very nice bunch of talent and way of playing.
Yep.
So I would suspect he will get called up
into the squad.
If I was
England, I would dangle the rose right in front of him. Even though he put his little Welsh flag up, you know, let's see how brave he is when you give him a kit bag.
25 grand a game.
Exactly. Yeah. Here is a graph of your England earnings. Here is a graph of your Wales earnings. Oh, and by the way, would you like that market rate contract? No, thank you.
Yeah.
So I'd be really enticing him now.
Wales will be doing the same thing. Wales will be trying to get him in there this year.
And to go back, I've got nothing against Johnny McNichol or Willis Halaholo as individuals, and I would do exactly what they are attempting to do by becoming Welsh internationals. But Wales, you don't need 29, 30-year-old New Zealanders.
Nope.
Get in this kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and England, exactly the same message. Go get this kid into an England shirt.
Yeah. Pay him the money.
Pay him whatever he wants. He's actually more valuable to you because you just get a great player. You take one away from someone else.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
No, this was a good game. And this was... I thought Northampton's pack, they were put under pressure at times by Gloucester, but overall they stood up quite well to the pressure and gave themselves a good enough platform and gave Conor Cobus-Reiner a good enough platform to win the game. So,
and good bounce back as well, because they could easily have folded.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
They got beat by Sale, they got smashed by Leinster two weeks on the bounce. Yeah. The easy thing here would be to say, yeah, actually, Folkestone were not that good. They are pretty good.
They are good enough, and it's more, they've got to, we know the way that they play. With ball in hand, when they get the ball out wide, they've got some seriously dangerous, talented backs. The bit that's always concerned me is the pack. And without being sensational, they were proficient enough against what is a very good Gloucester pack.
They could really do with a couple of extra props. I know they've got loads of props, but I think
they've got a scrum
more.
Issue.
Yeah. They need more. Yeah. Or they need coaching of some description. Do you know who's very good at coaching a scrum?
You?
Dorian West. Lionouts, not so much. Scrums, pretty good.
Does Tittrell coach scrums on the ground or scrums in the air? Is he scrums in the air?
Scrums in the air, so he'd be perfect for Northampton. so good win. Very good win.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah,
it was.
Important.
Did you do this game, Tim? No.
No. I didn't see this game. I was on the train over to London at the time. Well, I was getting ready for the game at Twickenham at the time. Brilliant occasion, by the way, they did put on at Twickenham. It's great.
Biggest
club game in Europe.
70-odd thousand?
Yeah, so 17,000 people were.
75. It's cracking.
What's the record they've got there?
I don't know. But all I know is it was not one of those where there's certain grounds in the Premiership where you hear the attendance and then you go, really? It was very, very easy to get away from that ground, given that was the alleged attendance. This one was, I was stood in a massive queue getting back to Twickenham train station. It took me ages to get on a train back to London.
It's a pain leaving Twickenham.
Interesting, on Sale Shocks, their attendance have gone up by 8% this year.
Their official attendance.
No, their actual attendance. Their actual attendance. Which in the league has gone down. What does that tell you?
Sale are now up the charts of one of the highest attended clubs, are they?
They have definitely got the largest increase. Definitely got the largest increase. So make of that what you will, boys.
Lies, damn lies, and something else.
And something else, indeed.
We haven't mentioned the Sale. The Bath's good win at home against Sale. They've got to do something about their pitch.
That pitch is an absolute
employ
joke.
Employ Northampton's groundsman.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Employ a groundsman. Anyone.
I feel sorry for the groundsman.
That's probably true, actually. I'm sure the groundsmen work
bloody
hard.
You're next to a river.
They always say that ground's a nightmare because in the summer people go camping on it they're not camping on it now. You simply couldn't. But like, they play cricket
they
on
take
there.
Out the temporary stand and you play lacrosse and all sorts of
things. Yeah. So, it is a hard job.
Yeah, and being 20 yards away from a pretty major river, that can't help with the drainage.
Ashton Gate looked incredible as well, I've got to say.
The pitch
was unreal. And it looked so good that actually, I've got brilliant colleagues at BT Sport, that even the attention to detail of the people that work on the BT Sport rugby coverage was even to the point where the floor manager, who is the guy that kind of oils all the wheels and makes sure...
The Kiwi guy.
He's one of them, yeah. He's the main guy. He's very, very good.
He's awesome. He's awesome. I've seen him work, and he's ferocious.
Brando, he's there. He makes sure the man of the match trophies are there. He makes sure the players come out when they need to, make sure I'm where I need to be, and the cameramen.
I've seen him make sure people are in the right position, should I say. And yeah. not BT people either, because they're always in the right position. Yeah, so it's a very impressive operation.
He oils all the way, and he said to me, and this is how good the pitch looked, he said, Tim, when you're walking that way, walk on that strip. When you're walking back towards the tunnel, walk on that strip, because then you won't scuff up the grass, because it was that wow. Nice. It was that
been
nice.
Combed in the right direction.
Combed in the right direction. Anyway, I digress. The wrecks are difficult. But Bath got another win.
I think... Unfortunately, some people will look at this and they'll say, terrible, terrible decision right at the end. It's because Sale fought their way back into this. They got ahead. It's a weak penalty. And I think we've seen a few of these. For instance, Bristol nearly lost to a weak penalty, frankly.
No, Wasps nearly lost to a weak penalty.
Wasps, yeah.
Dai Young would have been absolutely fuming.
So, yeah, it does feel a little bit like the home teams get the advantage, but they should do. They're the home teams. And on top of that, you know, if you want to win it, get more than 1 point ahead. That's what I would... That'd be my advice.
Yeah.
I just think Sale have got more work to do, really. I didn't see the whole game, so I don't know how the lineup went. That is their biggest... their biggest takeaway, but I just, you know, they're not yet.
Bath lauded the line out. They absolutely battered them at line out.
Did they?
Yeah.
That's difficult then.
Yeah.
Difficult. They need to be a more cohesive unit. There's still a lot of new players there and they need to, you know, become a better team. That's basically all there is to it.
They need Lou Diego fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's not even in the country yet.
No. But when he's fit and when this team do click, I still think they're top four. I've still got them in my top four.
Yeah, I mean, when I tell you what, the other one as well, Mark Wilson, when he comes in,
muscle tone of a chimp, trademark,
exactly.
You can imagine Nick Mullin saying that. Can't you? Like, please, Nick, say that. Please, Nick, say that.
Muscle tone of a chimp,
Mark Wilson, muscle tone of a chimp.
He's a frightening man. But I think when we've got him in, he feels to me like a real leader. Johnny Ross, a real leader. Then you have got the Currys. You've got so many big characters there. It's just a matter of time until it all clicks. And also, the scrum's very, very good. So, you know, there's things.
But Bath, again, is this a resurgence?
Interestingly, you weren't at the wreck, were you? Sorry, you've already told me where you were. I don't know why I'm asking you this again. I don't know what was said, but Stuart Hooper got on the microphone straight after the game.
Was it a Delia Smith-type moment?
I'm led to believe it might have been. So, yeah, he got on the microphone and addressed the Bath fans, from what I understand.
Wow.
Probably thank you for probably end of a calendar year, Christmas and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for turning up.
So, yeah, it's a good win for Bath, that.
It is a good win for Bath.
There was quite a bit of Christmas chat over the weekend, which was really good. So Paul Gustard, in one of his answers to me, said...
He was furious, by the way.
Yeah, he was. But before the game, he said, Christmas is a time for giving. We're not in a giving mood. We want to take today.
Ooh.
Which I thought was really good. Ooh, I love that. I love that.
Bit of sass.
I love that. I thought it was great.
You can't get away with that, right, if you're Paul Gustard. If you talk about culture in this and the other, and like, it's just so... Because he's thought about it, it's not off the cuff. It's just a little bit...
Scripted.
Yeah.
I liked it. And just as I asked Pat Lamb just the first question on the pitch, and he just went, well, first of all, happy Christmas, everyone. And then with his answer, I thought it was lovely as well.
That's a very Steve Hansen thing to do.
Yeah.
So Steve Hansen, in a lot of his interviews or press conferences, he gets asked a question, totally ignores the question, just says, it was so-and-so's 50th cap today, so great to see that. And he did it in Japan as well. Every time it was like...
Do you know where that's come from?
I'm not going to answer that question. I just want to say a massive thank you to all the Japanese people out there who've helped make this tournament such a special
day. Tony Blair started this.
What, just this, ignore?
Yeah. So what he used to do, and it's carried on ever since, is he used to open up Prime Minister's questions, not with an answer, but with something like a tribute to a fallen troop.
Okay.
And the theory was behind it that he would always open up with something more serious, so anything which was asked had less gravitas than the thing that he'd just spoken about.
Yeah. And it totally changes the mood of the press conference as well.
Because you're doing something nice to someone else.
Exactly.
And then you can proceed.
You start off as a good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I quite like it. I might start doing it more often.
Well, with Premiership Rugby, just name whatever, you know, cause celeb it is for that week. Like, you know, this week I just want to, before we go into the serious business of rugby, I just want to say how important the mental health campaign is and how, you know, and just whatever the cause is for that week, go into that and then start asking your really hard questions about why your line-out's terrible.
Good win for Bath then.
Yeah. And that's two now.
Yeah.
Two.
It's almost like anyone can beat anyone.
It is almost like there is only, well, 1 point between third and eighth as it stands.
Wow. Mm. But do you know what? One Bath back row we have never, ever seen. Faletau was back this week.
Yeah.
We've never seen Underhill, Lowe, Faletau. They have never played in the same team together.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Which?
It could happen soon.
How is Hill? He's injured, right? Underhill.
Sorry. Yeah, Wonderhill is currently out. We're going to see that. We're going to see that back row at some point.
Yeah, but Underhill and Faletau are so injury prone.
Mm.
They'll play one game together and it'll be magnificent. And that back row with Zach Mercer coming off the bench when legs are tired.
Wow.
That could be the best back row in the league.
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry, I'm just looking at my fantasy rugby draft scores. 111.7 to me.
You've won two different games by the tiniest of margins.
By half a point.
Hey, it's a, you know, anyone can beat anyone in this league.
It wouldn't have
the
affected me.
The inches you need are everywhere.
The inches you need are everywhere. It wouldn't have affected me this week, but I have the most points against in our league. Which is pure, like,
you need to work.
I can't control that.
No, work on your D, Tim. Control the controllables.
Control your controllables.
Exactly. It's not fair.
As what I've told my boys, we just got to control the control boys after... control balls after JB beat us by half a point this week.
Yeah, have that.
And I think I lost by a couple of points to your brother last week, Tim.
Do you know what?
I have to play JB next week as well.
Oh, you can do it.
8-0 after playing me.
Do you know what? I deserve it.
You do deserve it.
Well, speaking of next week's matchups, me v JB is the big matchup.
That is exactly. Huge.
Before we talk about next week's matchup, do you want to talk about the Esportif intelligence report?
Oh yeah, that is quite interesting actually.
Well, I don't know. I don't know anything about this.
All right. So Esportif are a big agency, if you don't know, and a little bit of
what is that?
That is John Major. You know. shall I just explain why
you've got John Major?
It's a very kind of
speaking to you.
It sounded like a sort of clip of World War II.
Yeah, it did.
Very grainy. You know,
so what happened before is I was reading an article in the Times. It mentioned John Major. And it mentioned here Tony Blair's election victory. And I just had a flashback. I thought, did he start his election campaign with a soapbox? Do you remember this?
No.
Yeah, so back in the day, he started his election campaign with a soapbox. I was like, that can't be right. He can't just have taken a soapbox somewhere and stood on it. So I googled John Major soapbox. Loaded up the video, but it didn't load. I've turned on my phone, and this John Major video is there. John Major literally on a soapbox. So yeah, he actually did that. So Esportif, they are a agency primarily concerned with rugby. Little bit of inside here for their Christmas gift, they gave everyone port and cheese.
Very nice.
Yep, so you all know.
I fondued cheese today for the first time.
Did you?
I've eaten a cheese fondue before, but I've never made one. But it's very easy and it was unbelievably delicious.
Mm. What cheese?
Mainly Gruyere, a little bit of Manchego in there and some cheddar just to chunk it out.
We had fondue in a Belgian place in Manchester.
Oh, yeah.
And it was awesome.
Bock bar.
And I've never been able to go back there. Do you know why? Because... Well, I like to order things when I'm hungry. You have to order there a day in advance for bloody melted cheese.
What?
Yeah, like they won't do you like a cheese toastie, a croque monsieur. You've got to order like a day before.
I'm good. Well, I think it's the best way to... basically, I've got a few friends and I went, do you want to come over? I've got a load of cheese left over. I could just put some cheese and port out and stuff. And they went, we got a load of cheese left over. Let's do a fondue. So they brought all their cheese. I brought our cheese. Just that's a brilliant way to... get rid of the cheese board.
What a good idea.
It was great.
That is a good idea.
Bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
I might do some tonight.
Yeah,
I'm getting hungry now.
Loads of garlic, bit of white wine. Simmer that off and then get the cheese in.
I've been running off about 5,000 or 6,000 calories at least in food every day for the past week and a half.
Keep it going.
End it in style.
Yeah.
So Esportif, anyway, gave out port and cheese. So the way that you know that someone was represented by Esportif the other day was if they were carrying around a box of port and cheese. So they have done a survey ranking the positions in the Pro 14, Top 14 and Premiership in order of average pay of starters.
Yes.
So it turns out that the highest average pay for a starter belongs to the second rows. Both in the top 14, the Pro 14 and the Premiership.
Correct.
And I think universally, the bottom paid player, unbelievably, is hooker.
According to this, correct. Now, it doesn't ring true to me that. Not the hooker is surprising, but the fact that locks feature top in both Pro 14 and Premiership, it doesn't stack up with my intuition and what I know about rugby salaries.
Well, yeah, and I'm kind of with you, but Pro 14, there's a lot of skippers that are locks.
Yes.
A lot of internationals that are locks in those teams. Alan Wynne-Jones, Johnny Gray, Ian Henderson. Yeah, James Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan and Devin Toner.
Devin Toner. In the Premiership.
And Marrow,
Cruz, Skelton.
Launchbury.
Courtney Laws.
Yeah, Laws would be important.
Adam Coleman.
Coleman, who is potentially on a very big deal if some of the rumours are to be believed.
Dave Atwood, Luke Diaga.
Good one. But then the difference to like the Quinn second row that started this weekend, Simons and Lewis.
Lewis.
I mean,
Levies or.
Kids. Mm. In a number of teams, second rows. So, if we take some of those guys, so Launchbury, for example, Launchbury will be on good money. He'll be on England money.
Yeah.
He will not be the highest paid player in Wasps. Not by some distance, I would imagine, because Sopwanga and Fekitoa will be on significantly more.
But then Joe Simmons, whilst being a starter, will be way down the money.
Yeah, well, the question...
Yeah, for Exeter, yeah. But then Hogg will be mega money, and who else? Well, basically it's not Johnny Hill. Dave Dennis might be on reasonable, but not...
Wasn't Dave Dennis captain of Australia for a little while?
He might have captained
Australia. So
yeah, like, he'll be on reasonable money, but it doesn't quite stack up to me.
Well, let's assume it's true. That wouldn't be where I would invest the most proportionate amount of money in a squad. We've had this discussion.
I think they might have listened to this podcast and thought that's a bloody interesting thing. Let's go and do that. I understand it because it is about rare body types, and there's just not that many guys. You know, you're not getting away being a lock now at 6'4".
You've got to be 6'5".
6'6", 6'7".
I mean, yeah.
These guys are enormous now. And the bigger they get, the more that they'll get paid because the rarer that they'll get. I can see that. What astonishes me, though, is that hooker is the lowest paid position. That is astonishing because, you know, you think of the spine of the team. You want, you know, the hooker, the eight, the halfbacks, the centres, the fly half.
Well, at hooker, there's so much pressure on hookers because of line-out.
Yeah.
So, like, the skill set for that, you'd think it'd be prioritised.
I would imagine that your lowest paid players are going to be your 11, 14, two flankers, because a lot of people can do it.
Yeah.
Weirdly, right, 11 and 14 are the two highest paid players in the top 14.
Which is interesting. Probably does show they like to buy in a lot of that talent. And there's some sensational players in the top 14 who play out on the wings. Yeah. Radrada, Cheslin Colby, Pano, Raka.
Yeah, they are quite good, aren't they?
Julian Surveyor will be on reasonable money.
Colby.
Yeah, all of those boys will be on mega, mega money.
Yeah. Poor old hookers, eh?
Interesting.
Always getting their necks in the wrong places. Always pressure. And they get paid pittance.
And they get called fat by doctors.
Exactly.
Disgrace.
So other than the big grudge match between me and JB next week in our fantasy rugby draft, after the grudge match between Phil and JB, let's look at the...
Do I need to win any more fantasy rugby games to get into the playoffs?
No, you're not far off. Am I there now? You can just relax for a week.
Yeah, we'll relax for the next 15 rounds. Oh, no, next 13 rounds.
Can I let the boys go on holiday?
You're almost there. Yeah.
You can do, yeah. Can. Give them next week off.
Bearing in mind how bad you've been for the last 2 years. This is like... what's the... I was going to say Lazarus, but that's the wrong thing. What's the fable, the comeback? Like a phoenix from the flames, anyway, is what you are.
I'm the Bristol. I am the Bristol of fantasy rugby.
Mm.
It is funny, for the last 2 years, JB will talk about anything other than fantasy rugby. Now, pretty much the first thing he wants to talk about as soon as you see him is fantasy rugby.
Fair play.
Yeah.
Fair play. What are the
Doing
fixtures?
Very well. So, Friday 3rd of January, and I'll be... When this kicks off, I'll be on a plane somewhere over
across
East Asia.
Yes.
Is Sale hosting Harlequins?
A game I will be in attendance for.
This should be...
This is a live game on BT Sport as well.
Is it?
Yes.
They know how to pick them.
Comfortable home win.
This will be a good game, and it will be a comfortable home win. Yes, I completely agree with that.
I think a home win.
Saturday. There's a 1 o'clock kickoff, according to this. Is that a BT Sport game?
Which one is it?
So it's Leicester hosting Bristol.
I believe so.
So this is referenced it before. This is a must-win game for Leicester.
I think Leicester win it.
So Bristol have looked a little bit shaky, but it's not massive changes they need to win it. They just need to correct a few things, a few defensive errors, a few decisions here and there to win this. I still think, at home, Leicester know how important this is.
Are we getting two games?
No. That is not actually that's not a live game on BT. That one.
Is that timing right?
Why is it 1 o'clock kickoff?
I don't know, but it's not a live game. The live game is Gloucester against
Bath.
Can you call your people and find out why this is?
Why have they made it earlier? I don't know.
Oh,
so who's it? So JB, are we saying Leicester?
I am saying Leicester.
Tim. Leicester-Bristol,
I'm probably saying Leicester.
Yeah, I think Leicester are going to do it. It will. It's very important for the league, actually, for Leicester to do it, I think.
Mm. Well, London Irish will not agree.
Well, yeah.
Or Bristol.
It closes that gap.
Yeah.
But you're right. Maybe a few fans wouldn't agree that. But as a neutral supporter of the entire league...
Like me?
Like Tim, then yeah, it would be good for Tigers to get a win.
I genuinely have no allegiance.
Yeah,
genuinely. But people ask me this a lot when I'm out at grounds, and I know a lot of people sort of go, "Oh, right, yeah, you're just saying that." I genuinely don't.
Same.
I always just followed whoever my brother was playing for. So I have a little soft spot for London Irish from that point of view. I have a soft spot for Bath because I lived there.
Sale.
I have a.
Your brother was second highest tackler up until Christmas at Sale.
Then you get fired by text message from Sale.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that happened as well.
Well, I don't remember that, actually.
Yeah, you got fired by text message.
Yeah.
Because we went to the game afterwards on Open Up the Podcast with how amazing the stadium was. Yes,
it's about right. 6 years ago, and you've moved on to much bigger and better things since then.
Yeah. Oh, no. I got fired. I thought you were talking about my brother.
No,
I
got fired.
I got fired by text message.
No, from your brother was fine.
It
was,
I didn't get fired.
It was you they wanted out.
Yeah, it's true.
Although there was a story about Chris Jones, the Sale lot, getting dropped from England by the team doctor. Do you know that one?
No.
Chris Jones allegedly was.
I know he got dropped from Sale for my brother.
Yes, yeah, he did. He did. In fact, he was there for a remarkably long time and never played. He got dropped by the doctor somehow. By the doctor saying. Well, I would see you now, but you're not in the team tomorrow, so...
you're out. Wow. Yeah. More important bodies.
Yeah. Wow.
What were we saying?
So, predictions. So, we're all saying Leicester.
Yeah.
Then we've got Gloucester hosting Bath, which I think will be a home win.
I think it'll be a home win. I think that's a big game, that. Huge. That'll be a brilliant. That'd be the game I'd want to be out of the weekend.
The atmosphere.
Absolutely agreed. Fantastic.
They've had some good old scuffles, these two. Did Tavis Noyle get red carded in this? Do you remember they had one right at the end? And
I love JB's little niche recall. Do you remember this?
This one game.
And this
15 years ago.
The name...
Yeah, it went. It was a really muscular ex-bodybuilding...
Scrum half/winger.
Yeah. And I'm sure it kicked off like right at the end. There was at least two red cards. Tavis Noyle being one. I want to say Dave Atwood got a card too.
Mm.
Really went off. No! Was it Ryan Lamb? Definitely Tavis Noyle. Ryan Lamb.
Yeah. Awesome. I love it. It'll be a tasty one.
The headline that I've just Googled Tavis Noyle red card was Tavis Noyle punches Leroy Houston in dramatic Gloucester.
Leroy!
Gloucester versus Bath Derby in 2014.
When was the last time you saw red card for a punch? I do not condone violence, and no one should punch anyone. But it is you haven't heard about a punch in a rugby game forever.
A scrum half punching a number eight, yeah. No less.
A massive
ex-bodybuilding scrum half.
Yeah, on a massive island of number eight.
I'm sure there were more cards than that.
I feel
like it's three yellows and two reds.
Two reds and five yellows.
Oh, who was the other red?
Sila Puafisi.
No, I wouldn't have got that.
No. There you go.
And the yellows?
loads.
don't. There's five of them.
Five of them.
Not got it in front of me.
No, thanks.
Oh, that's. I want a tasty. I'm not saying I want punch stabbing, but I want niggle.
Yeah.
I want niggle.
Someone find me the last legitimate rugby punch, and we can archive it. Oh. You can watch it over and over again. Last time it happened on tape.
The video that made me fall in love with rugby was, I've said this before on the pod, but my mum went down to Woolworths. We had to sit in her office all day, so she went to Woolworths, said, pick a video to watch, and we picked the highlights, like World Cup 87, it was a video. And there's an unbelievable punch, I think it's Gary Whetton, a New Zealand lock, absolutely floors a Welshman. In fact, if you put into YouTube right now, 1987 World Cup punch Wales, something like that, it is like, you can hear... I think Wayne Shelford comes in and absolutely ends somebody.
That's a Gary Whetton punch.
It might not be Gary Whetton. It might be Buck Shelford, but it is like it doesn't get more old school than that punch.
It's got a H in it. I'm not the guy for finding this sort of stuff. Ooh, no, you are right. Yeah, do you know what I miss at Christmas now? And they always used to have it.
Oh yeah, yeah. There you go. Buck Shelford knocks out a Welshman. Is this the one? This is in the World Cup. This is the semi-final of the World Cup. Punch, punch.
Oh! That's a blindside.
Bloody hell.
Oh, my God. Oh, Buck Shelford might legit be the hardest man ever to play rugby, I reckon.
Almost.
What would happen?
This punch coming in now from Shelford.
Yeah, enjoy that.
Bang. Wow! Oh, that is a sucker. Woo-hoo!
That is a sucker punch.
Proper sucker punch.
Oh my God!
Good night.
Yeah. I mean,
imagine if that happened now.
Don't condone violence, but wow.
That would like. I mean, that'd be
you could kill a man if these guys conditioned.
Do you know
they
when
are.
I think rugby punching stopped? Like really stopped. I mean, it still happened.
Ashton Tuolangi.
Yeah,
that's probably a good one. Yeah, I think when they took it really seriously was when the police started getting involved. So I think Neil Back and Lawrence Dallaglio got into it. Definitely Neil Back, and the police got involved. As in, you're no longer allowed to hit each other on the pitch, lads. And then it basically stopped. But yeah, they had a few instances. Was that? Maybe Dallaglio was a separate incident. Definitely Neil Back. Definitely.
Ashton might have the accolade of taking the best punch and staying upright.
Yeah. Yeah. I still can't believe he stayed up after that.
Yeah.
Fair
anyway,
anyway, we're getting totally distracted.
Some non-punching niggle, please, Gloucester Bath.
Yes. The next game, unlikely to be much niggle. Saracens host Worcester.
Yeah.
Unless they're going to niggle over Jack Singleton.
Yeah, I expect...
No, you have him. No, you have him. We don't want him.
Did he play back row today, Singleton?
He came on because... I can't remember who went off. But, him and Jamie George were both on for the last... few minutes.
Excellent. Okay, fine.
Then on Sunday, we have London Irish hosting Exeter Chiefs, which is...
not going to go well one of these teams.
Yes.
And I suspect that team isn't going to be Exeter Chiefs.
It's going to be a 5-0 bonus point win, and that team is going to be Exeter Chiefs.
I fear that you're correct.
Yeah. London Irish need to get a point out of this game.
Yeah.
Needs to get something, just a better performance than the last two outings. And then final game will be quite interesting. Wasps host Northampton.
And I'll be there for that.
Will you?
I'll be in the flesh.
Very nice.
So for those of you that listen to any of my other podcasts, for instance, pilot episodes, I'm going with Godders.
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 Also head of RAF Rugby. And guess who else?
I know who else.
I think I know who else.
Carl Vorderman.
Vorders.
Vorders.
I've met her. I made a music video with her.
What? Another stories. You interviewed Alex Ferguson.
The guy that I used to do my radio show with on XFM, Jim, he found, as he was clearing out a loft, he found his old, at university, his housemates made a little band and did some songs, and he found a recording of a song he did about Carl Vorderman.
No.
Yeah.
What, is it a good song?
It was all right. It was called Carol O'Carroll. It got to number 11 in the... No, number... It got to, we got it up to number 11 in the in the iTunes chart.
Shut up.
Via our radio show at one point. With a band we called New Vorda.
Oh, nice.
So basically we found this song. It became a thing on the show. And we got a band in Manchester to record the song properly, as it should be heard. And then Carol Vorderman said, as long as any proceeds of any sales go to a charity she works with, then I'll be in the music video. So we did a music video with her.
What was the song called?
Carol O'Carol. It's on Spotify.
That is ridiculous.
This might be a thing to go out of the year on.
What a way to finish the year.
Let me go to Spotify. Carol O.
Yeah, well, whilst you're doing that, I will just say that I will be at Wasps. So anyone saying that I hate Wasps, I don't. I'm even going to the Rico to watch Wasps play, and I'll be supporting them.
And I'm in a couple of beers afterwards.
Look at the album cover. Look at the song cover.
That's on Spotify.
Well, play it then. Catchy.
So this is what my mate wrote when he was at university.
Got an XFM feel to it.
Etc. You can find the rest for yourself, but there you go.
Amazing. Now, as we're on your radio career, you got retweeted by Richard Branson.
Not even retweeted, he just, you know, posted an article.
Richard Branson?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Me and RB. That's why I'm Happy New Year. I'll have a good one. I'll be on Necker Island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Hell of a jacket you're wearing in that.
Great jacket that is, mate.
Edgy.
Track top.
Edgy.
Very, very
That
edgy.
Did make its way onto a BT Sport WhatsApp group where we just with the tag edgy. That picture. I did get rinsed for that.
Excellent. Lovely track top.
Right, well, let's leave it there. And next week we'll be back. Me and Tim will be back because we've been 10 weeks off. You're taking 3 weeks off, Phil.
3 weeks off.
So have a lovely time.
We could try and get another guest. Another idea is we could potentially open up to. Listeners to dial in.
You could do that. I mean, I've got two surprises who may or may not.
All right. Watch this space. Next week could be exciting. Have a happy New Year, gents.
Yes.
Happy New Year. Yeah.
Have a great trip, Phil.
Oh.
Studio's falling apart.
Indeed.
The microphone knows you're off.
It's already giving in.
It's already giving in. Have a great one yourselves. Thank you very much for listening throughout the year. Download, subscribe, tell your mates. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.